Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Chronic Man podcast. This is Josh, your host. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Mark. Mark is an active member of the Bedroom and Battlefields Discord group and the Chronic Man Discord group. If you don't know what Discord is an application that's accessible through your phone and through your desktop computer. It's basically a social networking site without all the ads and all the other garbage that goes with most social networking sites these days. It has channels related to hobby and whatever it is, because we created our own Discord group, and then we can then facilitate different text and different voice channels in there, so people can access, for example, for our Crown of Command one, you can access the like the Ebi Lab painting channel, which showcases loads of people's painted, wonderfully painted projects or work in progress images of their models that they're painting. It could be about battle reports and people posting up about their games they're playing. It could be more specific to a certain game, specialist game or main game, like Epic Space Marine, Man of War, you name it, it's all there. So there's numerous channels where you can go through and check out what wonderful stuff people are doing out there in our community. And if you wanted to sit down and paint and chat with one of the guys during the week, there's voice channels where you can do that. You can access, like, there's a camera so you can show people what you're painting at the time. Or if you just want to chat and talk to the guys there as you paint, which is a really nice social aspect to the Discord, which I think it's one of the strongest features of it personally. And I get to connect and chat with guys all around the world, with different time zones. So it's been a really invaluable part of the community as we see it grow and more people join and share their stuff and connect. Maybe there's a player locator channel where you can maybe find someone locally in your area that plays the same games you do. So it's become a valuable extension and tool for us to grow our community and feel that we're even closer. You know, we've got remote games where people host, like Chris and Cameron host games in Man of War. I played Space Hulk. I played the entire Space Hulk campaign with Chris through Discord, which has been fantastic. So that means basically he sets up the board and all the miniatures, and I just instruct where I want my models to go, and I roll the dice and I show on my camera where what my dice are and that kind of thing. And we have a great time. We have other people joining in, and yeah, Discord's become a really valuable part of our community as we see it sort of grow and hopefully develop over time. So me and Mark talk about that a lot, and also Mark is a patron of mine and also part of the painting tutorials that I do for a number of students at the moment, which is great to see that sort of growing. And I'm showing people how to do certain techniques, like how to paint black, how to paint yellow, or how to paint a specific race, for example, Chaos Dwarves, how to do the reds and all that kind of thing, how to paint faces, how to do certain techniques. So me and Mark have done a couple of lessons now. We're going to do our third one this week, and it's been great to see his progress through Discord as he posts up work in progress shots. So that's another great feature, and it sort of connects me and him as well. You know, we can talk and chat and paint at the same time as I show him different things that he needs to learn to continue with his projects that he's painting on. So if you want to check out the Patreon for the Crown of Command, we have a 7-day free trial that you can go and access all the painting videos now. There are two that are available. One is the Orc, Space Orc. He's an evil sons. I've painted the face and done my recipe for the skin tone on that. And there's also a Night Goblin now, which you get to vote on. You get to vote to see what you want painted each month. And at the moment, there's a Night Goblin. I did the black on his robes, and I did the freehand marking on that as well. So doing a bit of freehand, painting black was the one we did for April this month. So you get to vote again next month to see what next miniature you want me to paint for that. So that's part of the Stormboy tier. And then there's the Heavy Ledge painting tutorial tier, where you get a 40-minute lesson with me one-on-one. Just going through what aspects of painting you want to learn about. So, but we get to talk about that in the interview anyway, so you get to know more about that as we go along. But I hope you enjoy Mark's conversation with me. I really enjoyed it, and I hope to have Mark back on at some point in the future. as he has a load of great things to talk about and lots of knowledge about the hobby and great ideas. So until then, guys, enjoy the interview.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks for taking the time to come and chat with us.
No, you're all right. Don't worry. It's good.
And, yeah, today we're going to talk about, you know, your involvement with, firstly, your initiative to start up a group. Is it called the Orcs Tavern or something like that? You have to remind me.
Yeah, so it's the Royal Orc. And it's the idea was we had over on the Bedroom Battlefields Discord community, we decided to run a kind of Christmas party, if you like. And it was going to be done in the style of a virtual pub. And we had, you know, pub games and silly things like that and quizzes and just general chat and getting to know each other and people painting along. And it worked really well. We had about probably 20 people join, which we were really surprised by. So David and myself sort of got together afterwards and said, well, you know, this is something that we could do more frequently. And we decided we'd do it on a kind of quarterly basis. So we did one in December and then we ran another one in March, going to do another one in June and then September. So there'll be kind of four times a year that people can get an opportunity to meet up and chat. And it's worked really well, actually. And it's been great to get to know people, see their faces and kind of find out a bit more about what they're up to, tell some silly stories and plan. And you know, it just sort of gives a bit of a structure around, rather than doing it as a drop-in, we thought, well, let's try and do it as a two-hour session. And then people join for the majority of it. And actually, most people were able to come along and join for the whole lot. So it was great.
That's awesome. That's great. Yeah, I think it's a really great idea. I did manage to catch the last, 20 minutes before everyone dropped out and went to bed. So
yeah, I think because for you, it was at like 4 a.m. or something ridiculous, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was like, I think I got up at 5. I was going to get up at 4, but then I just couldn't do it. I don't know why. And I just, you know, naturally just woke up at like early, about 5:30 or so. And then jumped in, or I think it might have been 6 o'clock or something, and you're still there. And I thought I'd just jump in quickly. But yeah, I was really surprised at the number of people there. And I thought it was such a great idea. And the Royal Orc, I think, is a great name. And yeah, you got to see lots of people in that. You had some topics you discussed during that session. And yeah, it was just good to see people just doing the hobby and hanging out and, you know, showing their faces on camera or not, and then, you know, just contributing to the conversation. I think it's a really good idea.
Yeah, it was something that worked well because we talked probably 12 months ago about the idea of having regular paint and chat sessions. And I think because the paint and chat sessions that exist on your Crown of Command Discord are popular, it felt like maybe that was a little bit potential duplication. So there's already is somewhere to go and do that. So it felt like we wanted to come up with something that was got a little bit of something different about it, and that seemed to work. I think the other thing that people enjoyed about it is I tried to bake in things that are, you know, like, for example, roll a D6, and then we had like just random conversation generators and this kind of thing to talk about certain topics and stuff, because I think that sometimes you get those awkward silences where everyone joins and no one really knows each other. So just ways of doing that to stimulate it and kind of drive it forward and turn it into a bit more of an interactive session. I mean, so much so that actually Matthew and I have been talking about the fact that you could kind of do a slightly stripped down version of that and actually run it as a podcast. I know you have in the past, you've had podcasts where you've had maybe 7 or 8 guests on and hosted and asked them questions and stuff. And it's nice to hear so many voices and so many people's different views on it.
Yeah, I think podcasting can be a really lonely place sometimes if you're just doing it solo. And that's why I just do not do solo podcasts. I did them in the past, but I just refuse to do them now. That's why Carnifex is on with me sometimes when he can, and I always have a guest on, you know, to talk about something, because you want that extra voice. You want that sort of, you know, to and fro bouncing of ideas back and forth and actually having a conversation. I was going to suggest even to you, because I started doing live streaming recently, and I bring on not just one but maybe 2 guests at a time. And it's just a nice way to, again, sort of you have a conversation about a certain topic. And I'm a fan of certain other YouTubers that do this. And I think it's a really great way to invite former guests back onto the live stream and for other people to get to know them. They can see them, talk to them, they can interact with them. So it's kind of in the same kind of medium, but what we're talking about, of course, is Discord. And Discord is still quite an enigma for some people. They just don't know what it is, how to get into it. And it's quite a difficult, difficult to get in and enter and start. But I think navigating your way through Discord is kind of strange and new for people who have never seen something like this before, you know, going from personal experience. So maybe it's a good topic. Yeah. Now about Discord and, you know, how to get in, what to do, how to find these chat rooms and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a strange one. And I when I signed up to Matthew's Discord, I'd never had a Discord account before. And I just thought, well, I'll give it a go and I'll see what it's like. And I joined, and at that point I was probably the second person to join or something. There was only a handful of people in there. So it was quite a safe space to sort of try out how the technology worked and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I've not got any about 10 years ago, I got rid of all my social media accounts because I was just finding it just exhausting, just doom scrolling and looking through all this sort of endless stuff and all the adverts coming in, and yeah, just found it like it wasn't good for me. So I got rid of all that. And I was a little nervous, well, would Discord be similar? But I think it's sufficiently different that it's quite focused. However, what I then did is I then found your Discord and joined that. And then I joined about 7 or 8 other ones. And at that point, I then found I was a bit overwhelmed. So I'm now only a member of 2 or 3. And that for me is about the sort of peak spot where I can keep it organized and I know what I'm doing and I can have a little bit of time looking at it and then I can have some time away. And it just doesn't become too much, because I think that all of the social media platforms out there, they're all private companies and they're all obsessed with keeping you on the platform. That's essentially what any software solution is, and nowadays it's keep you there, keep you on the platform, get the adverts in front of you. It's the same as the television was, you know, in the 1960s, and everyone was panicking that children are going to be polluted by the TV. And, you know, essentially social media is all about putting interesting stuff in front of you so that you then read all the commercially beneficial stuff to the companies who are advertising. But Discord doesn't have that about it. As to whether it will in the future, I don't know. And I think that's a risk area, but something we've just got to manage as a community. But as a way of getting to know people and have conversation and be open and honest and positive, I think it's really fantastic. I mean, I'm genuinely surprised by how little negative comments ever creep in, how many people ever say things that are a bit off colour. It's almost never. The community is very self-policing. And I think that there's almost like an etiquette that comes with Discord, where once you get a critical mass of people behaving in a positive, you know, sort of grown-up way, then everyone else will follow suit. And I think that you will have experienced that on yours, certainly.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I like coming into Discord and didn't know what it was, and I was quite, I don't know, a little bit cautious about Discord, or just not overly whelmed about, because when I got in there, I thought, oh, what's this? You know, it just seems like it's a bunch of separate channels and people are chatting and that kind of thing. But then over the years, I've really grown to love it. And it's my number one source of not just information, but interaction with people. And I think the paint and chat is the best thing ever, because what it enables me to do, it enables me to paint and talk and not get distracted. And I think you touched on it really well there with all the other social media platforms, even though they have their own, you know, useful properties and that kind of thing. We go to Facebook for certain relatively thing. We don't go to the paint and chat, but we go there to look at other people's miniatures or enter discussions maybe. But mostly it's just for like pictures and watching people doing their hobby and that kind of stuff. But it's Discord is a great way where you can have that. Plus, you can have these channels where you can watch, for example, remote play games, guys host Man of War, Blood Bowl, you know, you name it, whatever game that they're playing. We do a lot of that on our Discord, but you guys do a lot of similar sort of stuff, but sometimes a bit more varied. You talk about books, or we talk about, you know, parents with their kids and gaming. You have your own sort of, you know, as you say, your own paint and chat channels as well. So, yeah, like I said, they're really good environments, very friendly. People are just it makes people enthusiastic about the hobby, gets them motivated to do stuff. We've got painting challenges with the whole thing. So it's fully encompassing. I think it's very welcoming. And like you said, like it's just full of
positive, good people. And yeah, I think that sort of rubs off on other people, and I don't think we have any sort of bad eggs. You might get the occasional one, but they don't last very long.
Yeah, that's true. And I think the other thing that it seems very good at is being respectful of the fact that everyone, so I always kind of use this phrase that we're, I say always use a phrase, I can't remember what the phrase is now, but it was something along the lines of we're sort of very diverse in our approach, but we're united in our passions and our interests, you know. And I think that that's the thing that really works, is the fact that you have this environment where there might be people who are collecting brand new Age of Sigmar models and showing off their brilliant looking stuff. Mm. But then at the same time, it would never be seen as inappropriate or wrong for someone to make a bit of a Golden Space Marines joke or something like that and say, oh, I only like the 90s stuff. It's almost like everyone is entitled to their opinion. Mm. And it's all just collecting toy soldiers and playing with them. And everyone's very mindful of that. So there's kind of, people are passionate about what they're passionate about, but never to the detriment of somebody else's passions. And yeah, I think that's incredibly evident in how people are. And some of the stuff that I've seen that other people do, you know, it might be things that you think, well, I personally wouldn't do that. It doesn't hold interest for me, but I totally respect the fact that they're doing it. And the way that they're doing it and the passion they're putting in is remarkable.
Yep, absolutely. So yeah, everyone has a different take on the hobby, what the hobby means to them. It could be sort of current stuff, could be old stuff like we do. But it's great to see people just, you know, painting and doing something that's, you know, very beneficial for them in terms of having a hobby like ours. So yeah, it's great. So we've got historical stuff. Well, I think we've got on our channel too, historical gaming as well. We've included that. We don't have so much of the modern stuff, but it does pop up every now and again, which is fine. Like we're not going to shun anybody to say, hey, you know, we don't do modern stuff. It's nice to see people just actively doing something. Maybe they're playing the latest game of Warhammer Quest or something with their kids, or they're playing the latest HeroQuest or something like that with their kids, which is really great. And I know you guys are quite diverse in the topics you cover, because it ranges from everything from, you know, like solo play type really niche game companies to like the big boys like Games Workshop and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, it's great to see just people active, you know, showing pictures, because that can be quite daunting for people too, isn't it? Like showing their photos or their models and stuff like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really significant thing, I think. So, you know, I was in the hobby until when I was about 12 till I was about 14. And then by about 1994, I got out of it and never did anything again until 2018, where 2018 seems to be a date that crops up a lot, where people say, oh, in 2018, I got back into it. So we've got a theory that there's some kind of twin-tailed comet flew over the planet and reactivated something inside our brains or something like that in 2018. But either way, that was the point that I saw the Burrows and Badgers figures. I'm sure you've seen those. And I got that game and I started playing it with my daughter and she loved it. I painted those, and slowly but surely, you know, end up getting more things and getting into more games and painting more stuff. But I never shared any images of anything I'd painted until I joined the Bedroom Battlefields Discord. No. I'd never put anything online, partly, like I say, I haven't got any social media accounts, so therefore where would I show them? Mm. But other than to, you know, friends and family, it was all behind closed doors. And there was a sense of it being, well, I don't think they're probably painted particularly well. And of course, that might be true, but it's the fact that they're painted in the first place that people want to see. And when you share a painted model, no matter the standard of that paint job, what almost 99% of people in our communities want to see is, oh, that's a brilliant model. I like how you painted it. I love your choice of colors. It looks fantastic. It really come alive. Every single painted model looks better than every single grey model. That's my theory. And just to see paint on models and inspire people. And actually, I've found it a great motivator to share things that, you know, that I'm doing. And I've not ever had any feedback to make me feel like, oh, maybe I should have made that look better before I shared it. It's almost always positive. And anyone who gives you any sort of a tip, it will be very politely phrased and, oh, that looks fantastic. one thing you could do if you were interested is do this to it, but it's a bit more work and it's not for everyone. Those kind of comments, and it's like, I really appreciate that, really warm welcome, because it is daunting to show stuff. And if you look at Instagram, it's a big competition, but you look on these communities, it's not. It's much more about just enjoying the models and enjoying the hobby together.
Yep, no, that's a good point. I think people get sort of, or they feel like you say, they feel like, oh, well, we've got like an Ebby-led channel on our Discord. Maybe they presume that it's only for top painters. Well, it's not the case. It's like, just show your stuff, you know. Doesn't matter what level you are. You're just starting out, you know, you got your kids painting or whatever. Just show it, because I think people would be really encouraging, firstly. And like you say, they offer tips or whatever. And, you know, you always got to start somewhere. So like yourself, you got back in 2018. And got back into the hobby, you felt more comfortable, you know, showing your pictures of your models with the guys on the Discord there, which is really great to see and great to hear. And it can only just grow from there, because you're getting feedback or you're getting encouragement and you're seeing other people's painted works and you're starting to get more motivated to better yourself in your hobby, which is great. That also
absolutely.
It's another great segue, because we do our own painting classes together through Discord, don't we?
We do, which I've really enjoyed. And actually, what I've found really beneficial from that is being able to take things that I thought were true and things that I thought were that I was limited by. So the parameters that I thought existed, and using your expertise to try and say to me, no, those aren't necessarily your limitations. These are things that you can do. I think that's what a good teacher can do, is they can open up the possibilities of your potential and they can actually take the lid off. Rather than say, I'm going to help you reach the lid, they're going to say, no, there is no lid. Don't worry about that. We can get you beyond there. I think that the standard of painting on some of the figures that I've done as a result of your lessons is definitely significantly better. But it also, I haven't felt daunted by this slightly bizarre sense of the concern about doing a paint job on a model you like that's of an appropriate standard to befit the model. There's something about the artistry that the sculptor has put in, and then you have to do the rest. It's quite an unusual thing, really, as an art form, that you are taking someone's art and then completing it. Never would you buy a painting for your home and then find that you've got to do the rest on it. Yeah. You know, or a film that, you know, oh, it's the latest Martin Scorsese film, but the final 20 minutes is missing, so you're going to have to make it yourself on your phone. You know, there isn't, that those things don't exist. So it's quite an unusual experience. And sometimes I think feeling overwhelmed by the sense of duty that you have to paint something to a standard that is appropriate. And I do think that and it will have always been the case, but the studio scheme paintwork that you get that's there to inspire you can equally be quite intimidating, quite frightening. And I think the painting lessons have really helped me, A, with the technical side of the painting, the actual practical technical side, but I think massively with the psychological barrier of getting started, putting something into it, seeing what you can do. You know, the ones that I've just done now, these May Queens that you've shown me how to do, these very light white dresses that would almost be semi-transparent, so that there's flesh tones that you can slightly see where skin's pressed against it. I'm really pleased with how they're coming together. But when I saw the studio scheme for those, that's the reason I bought those models, but it's also the reason that those models sat there unpainted for 12 months. So the very same inspiration also became perspiration, you know, and I think that it was absolutely key to me to be able to access that mentoring thing. And I think that people need mentoring and coaching, you know, generally in life, and the best companies and the best, you know, recognize the fact that professionals need that, and everyone needs to learn from everyone else, and learning is not something that just you do once. But yeah, no, I found the lessons to be absolutely really, really useful, but also incredibly enjoyable as well, and really look forward to them.
Oh, that's good, mate. Yeah, I think you did really well, because I thought that was quite an intimidating technique. And to be honest, I never have done that before. I've never done like that kind of technique before. I can see the guys who do it on, you know, certain miniatures they're painting or whatever. And I know I can see the process, but I'd never done it myself and had never had the model to do it. So it was really good for me. It's great for you. I'm glad that you sort of found a practical way, an easy way of doing it to achieve that effect, and it wasn't so complicated. It's only like just two colors, really, wasn't it? You know, two or three colors. That's all we had. So that's two or three paints, and you could achieve that just through a certain process of, you know, from start to finish, and that way you could practice painting those maidens like that. And I think they look really nice, mate. So I've seen your progress on Discord there. So well done to you for sticking in there.
Thank you. I've just got to get them finished now, but yeah, they are coming together, and I think that it's so lovely, isn't it, when you see something that you've put off for whatever reason. I've just actually had, just arrived on Saturday morning, a Green Knight model that I bought off Games Workshop. The first thing I bought off Games Workshop since 1994. Wow. And it arrived, and it looks absolutely fantastic. I mean, it's an absolute masterclass in Perry Brothers sculpting, isn't it? And it's so wonderful. But again, that's one of those ones. And you look at that Mike McVeigh job with those hand, those freehand curlicues all across all the barding and everything, and it would be very tempting to say, oh, I'll paint that one day, but I want to paint that this year. You know, that's because putting it off, what's the value in that? When exactly. I can get so much enjoyment and joy from doing it now.
And you can just take your time with it. You know, it's like a centerpiece for your collection. So you can just take it just easy, just take it step by step, just take it easy, painting it, and then sort of just watch it grow and, you know, develop over time. Yeah, it's great. It's a really good thing that's made to order. It's got people sort of really excited about, you know, buying those old relics that you couldn't afford or couldn't get when you were younger, but now they're sort of remastered, if you like, you know, in new molds, new materials, maybe new metals they're using.
Yeah, this was metal, and it was £25, which I think's not bad.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, I was happy with that. I mean, it was more money than, you know, I normally pay, but for a one-off, I thought, yeah, that's all right. And it's certainly a lot cheaper than you buy it on the second-hand market. It's brand new and a really crisply cast. There's no extra flash on it. It looks really good, which I did actually half wonder, you know, how many people do they employ at their factory who are skilled metal casters? Because when was the last time they made metal models? I don't really know, but I presume they don't make many of them. But then they've come out well. So, you know, fair play to them. They've done a good job on it. And they've been respectful of their heritage, which is possibly one of the things that people get a little bit riled about, whether they are respectful of their heritage. But I think ultimately they've been trying to make money and sell more stuff. I mean, that's why Warhammer exists, doesn't it? To sell more figures. You know, when you really step back a bit, sometimes we can all get a bit annoyed about them being a private company wanting to make money, but it's always ever been the case, hasn't it?
Yeah. So now, talking about Warhammer, you attended a big Warhammer Day. Now, is this something that correlates with the Royal Orc?
Sort of. So, yeah, I mean, this is a very nice circular conversation, because it all roads lead back to playing Warhammer, and this is where it all began. And what happened is, we last year were intending in the Bedroom Battlefield community to try and do a bit of a meetup and go to Bring Out Your Lead, and it didn't come to pass. We didn't really properly arrange anything, and it didn't go. A couple of people went independently, but we didn't do a meetup or anything. But one of our community members, Jason, he's got these absolutely beautiful, enormous Orc and Goblin and Empire armies, about 8,000, 9,000 points of each. Just, you know, serious stuff. And it's spectacular. A lot of it is Perry miniatures in the Empire range, a lot of historical figures. He's got a lot of the Lord of the Rings figures in the Orc range. So it's all got that kind of quite realistic sort of look to it. It's not your Kev Adams vibe. Mm. It's more of a kind of late 90s or 2000s kind of look to it. And it's absolutely stunning. And what Jason's done is not only been, you know, amazingly prolific in the amount of stuff he's painted, but he's also, he arranges games at his home, and he invites people in, he teaches people the games. He's an absolute ambassador for the hobby. You know, very much in the way that you've got people like Chris and Cam on the Man of War side of things, you know, trying to get more people into doing it. And Joe Jason brought up this huge setup. We hired the village hall where I live in the Midlands in England, and Jason lives in the south. And then we had another guy, Ed, who's in our community, who lives on the south coast. and Luke, who lives up near Sheffield, and we all came down to the Village Hall on Saturday. We were there for about 9 or 10 hours, played this enormous game, a 15-foot by 6-foot table, four-player game, and it was a huge baggage train ambush. So the Empire were deployed along this road, and then the orcs were on them. And it, Jason had devised the whole scenario. There was twists and turns in there. We did magic item drafting using the 4th edition magic set and spell drafting as well. And we used the 6th edition rules for speed of play, really, more than anything else. We wanted something that... So Jason was saying that I think this is probably the best rule set for a big, big, big game because it keeps it kind of simple. But we had, for example, on there, you know, it was 3 steam tanks, 2 giants... 3 giants, you know, it was serious. And that's even before the reinforcements arrived. But it was brilliant. And, you know, just an amazing day. It was the first time I'd played Warhammer in 30 years. Oh. The first time I'd ever played it properly, I think, because I think I probably only actually played it as a lot of kids our age would have done when they were, you know, young teens, would have played it sort of not properly and just fumbled through a bit. This was a proper setup, but at the same time, not overwhelming. The mechanics of it kind of came back. We were, very much guided by Jason. He curated the whole thing, and he acted as games master as well as playing. You know, he came and set it all up in the morning, packed it all away in the evening. You know, it took like an hour and a half to set up and an hour and a half to pack away. But, you know, the spectacle of it was absolutely worth it. And it really did tick all those white dwarf boxes. You know, you just looked at it and just go, wow, this is actually real. And I think just the idea of the genesis of why to do it sits in the same place as the Royal Orc. It's about saying, okay, we're enjoying the collecting, we're enjoying the painting, we're enjoying the hobbying, we've met people, but actually how can we extend meeting these people and turn it into something more? And, you know, all 3 of those guys I only met through the Discord server. They're not people that I'd ever would have met before in real life. And actually, you know, we are a niche of a niche of a niche of a niche of a niche, aren't we? We're a tiny number of us. You know, I was actually thinking to myself as I was driving home from work yesterday, I wonder if that was the biggest game of Warhammer that's been played in England in 2024. It wouldn't surprise me. You know, and you're just like, actually, this is pretty cool, isn't it? You know, I know there's people getting back into the old world, and that's brilliant. But to see something, and it also had those homebrew elements. You know, there was things from the Warhammer Ancients game. There's things from Warhammer City. You know, it was there weren't point restrictions. I don't know what I mean. I say nominally about 8,000 points, but it wasn't balanced. It was a proper Rick Priestley-esque, Jervis Johnson-esque type scenario of just this is the game, this is the story, this is what's happening. Mm-hmm. And yeah, absolutely amazing. So such an experience and so brilliant, and I can't wait to do the next one.
That sounds amazing, man. Did you actually get to finish the game?
Well, no, in a sense, because we had a series of we did 4 turns over about 9 hours. So yeah, quite slow going, but brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Yeah. We must have had about 40 units each. So we didn't. However, the scenario was set up that for each baggage train that got off the board, that was a victory point. For each baggage train that got raided, that was a victory point to the orcs. Mm-hmm. And for any baggage train that was destroyed, that was like a net zero. No one gets anything from that. You've denied an opportunity for a point, but you don't get any points back. And it came down to the final roll of the dice, which was absolutely amazing. So we got no baggage trains off the board. 2 of them have been destroyed, wiped out. And then we had this final wagon that was actually like a war wagon. It had 8 crossbowmen in it, and 7 of them, it was surrounded by 42 black orcs. They'd lapped round and lapped round and lapped round. 42 of them on these 7 guys. 6 of them got killed. And then the final roll of the dice was a leadership test on the final guy. And he rolled 1 under his leadership and survived. But had it gone to another turn, it would have been absolutely decimated. So, yeah, nominally, I think in a way, it felt like an Empire win, but those orcs were on them, and they were absolutely swarming the board. So, yeah, it was they weren't getting out of that valley alive if we'd have played to the end, I'm sure of that. But, yeah, absolutely brilliant. And, again, it didn't really felt like it didn't matter who won or who lost or, you know, it was all very narrative and, you know, we were all trying, but at the same time, we weren't worried by it. And the best moments, the most memorable, were all the ridiculous dice rolls and the stupid spells and the bad luck and all the stuff that Warhammer can bring, you know, not the balance and the tournament and so on. And I know a lot of people are quite dismissive of 6th edition because they feel like it was the start of the formalization of it as being very much a game rather than a role-playing narrative experience. But Jason and I were talking and saying, actually, if you take the game, if you take the rules as an efficient set of rules and then apply them with a open narrative mindset, you end up with the best of both worlds, really. Whereas if you'd have used, say, 3rd edition Warhammer, it probably would have just been untenable because it's so complicated.
That's right.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Wow, that's great. And I saw that you used 4th edition magic, which is quite interesting.
Yeah, and that was purely because it's so much more fun than just rolling some dice and choosing some spells out of a book. The act of, you know, we were bluffing on things. We had the dismiss spell thing came up a few times and we were pretending to add power cards to it, but not really, and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it was, and people were thinking that we've got more cards than we've got and how many spells we're going to cast. I mean, most of the spells went horribly wrong and didn't work at all. But again, it was like, it was the game within the game thing that everyone likes about the card system. Well, not everyone, but I think it's ace. It feels like you're being a magician for a turn rather than just doing another shooting attack or something.
Yeah.
And you're not just buffing the army as a kind of planned way. I mean, basically anything can go wrong. And so I really like that about how you can have all your strategy in the world and all the tactics go out the window when everything goes wrong. Actually, that makes things fantastic. And very importantly, on the magic drafting, first card at the pack, Crown of Command.
Ah, oh, beautiful. Saw that, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and that felt like providence at the very start. You're just like, oh, okay, this is all going to work. So,
yeah,
but I don't think we ever called it into question because she just sat miles away from everyone, not getting in any trouble.
Now, that reminds me, Mark, you did actually draft all the items, which is a really good topic. I think that really changed everything for me. Once David told me about that, I don't know whether it was in our first interview on the Crown of Command, like episode 1.
Yeah.
He told me about drafting, and Dave's actually the guy who set up our Discord for us for Crown of Command.
Cool.
We have that community there. It's been wonderful. But yeah, he told me about drafting. I thought, bloody hell, that's a good idea. I never thought of that because otherwise you get that kind of mirror magic items.
Yeah.
I've got the black amulet. You've got the black amulet. He's got the black Geminar. He's got the black Geminar. I've got the Hydra sword. Oh, you've got the Hydra sword. You know, it's always this.
Yeah. How many of these things exist? Where do you get them? Like the local Asda. Yeah, exactly. It's quite important, isn't it, for the narrative and the story of Warhammer to be able to say, this is this character and he has this thing. You know, that was the thing that felt so exciting when you first got into the hobby, like, oh wow, look at this guy and he can do this. But the idea of being able to put all those cards on anyone and make your own stuff, yeah, it's cool, but you can abuse it. And I think the drafting really reins it in. It's really good.
Yeah, we love it. It really revolutionized everything for me for drafting. And luckily, everybody who I play with here in Japan are all on board with it. So that's great.
Cool.
Enjoy it as well. Yeah, I think, did you play the game last weekend? Was your big
This Saturday just gone. Yeah.
Okay, so we
this played Saturday the 13th. You played the previous weekend, didn't you?
Played the previous weekend with Warhammer Renaissance, which is basically the 4th edition rules, magic, but then sort of just slightly modernized and tweaked here and there, which we all enjoy playing because it's 4th edition. Asking for people to play 4th edition or 5th edition straight can sometimes be a bit of a stretch, even though they'll do it. But I think Renaissance kind of just bridges the gaps between certain things, and it's kind of like a modernized army books and rule book and that kind of thing. So people feel more comfortable playing it, which is great. I mean, you know, I still feels like playing 4th edition to me, so I don't really see the difference. But, yeah, we did the drafting. We played Empire versus Orc and Goblins as well. In a big game, for me, I prefer smaller games personally. Like 1,500 points is a really nice, sweet spot for me. 2,000 points maybe max, but we played 4,000 points aside. But of course, no items, so we had, you know, the whole width of the table, only 6x4, full of figures, and it was wonderful. It was really good to see, and had good friends here. It was one of my, it's probably the pinnacle, I'd say, of my gaming career so far. That day was so much
excellent.
With those guys, you know, going for lunch, going for dinner, you know, having a few drinks, playing until midnight and then crashing and then actually finishing the game, you know, like concluding it to the end. And yeah, it was really, really fun. Really enjoyed it. But it was kind of, for me, looking at Wellington's Empire Army, it's like, wow, you know, this is just out of like White Dwarf magazine. You know, the early fourth edition Chronicles of War, you know, the old battle reports from White Dwarf, always had like Empire versus Orc and Goblins. It's been one of my dream kind of matchups, you know, and we finally did it. And
yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like you say, like 30 years in the making, you know, of realizing the hobby, never having the opportunity of ever doing anything like that. It just seemed impossible then, you know, owning all those miniatures, painting everything, having another person to, you know, to enjoy that with you. But now it's all possible because we have been doing this for 30 odd years, you know.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the thing that is probably the elephant in the room when you're a kid and you're looking at White Dwarf is you didn't really process the fact that these were professionally painted armies by people whose full-time job it was to paint them. They had them in their studio. They put them on as battle reports to create content for a magazine. I mean, of course it was going to look spectacular and it was going to look amazing. But sometimes I think you look at your own stuff and go, I haven't got everything I need. And it doesn't, like, that's the worst mistake I think I made as a kid, is thinking that I didn't yet have the things I needed to have to enjoy myself. And I think that, yes, it's almost like a counterpoint to that idea of building up to be able to do something. I absolutely agree. It's amazing to be able to do it. But also I would actively encourage everyone to say, but while you're getting there, play with the smaller armies, play skirmishes, play this, play that. You know, just kind of make sure that you're kind of building up to that point, because actually that's the motivation to build up to that big point, isn't it? Of having all those little interactions as you go along. And I think that the idea of doing more of this is just so exciting. You know, just I'm so enthused by what could be. And it's all with old stuff and, you know, old rules and people I've met, and, you know, all of it kind of feels like it's come back full circle, and almost like I'm completing the piece of the puzzle that was never there when I was 13 or 14 that made me go, I'll do something else. Is it just wasn't, you know, we started off at secondary school, everyone was into Warhammer, you know, it was really popular, and HeroQuest and all these kind of things. And then by about, you know, the third year into secondary school, it was kind of on the wane. And that was that critical mass thing. And I know that we are a small number of people, but through things like Discord and the communities and the podcasts and so on, we've never been more connected and we've never been more able to see each other. I think the only thing that's never going to go away as a problem is physical distance. But for things like smaller games, you know, I played with Cam on Man of War, and, you know, he's the other side of the planet, and that was brilliant. It worked really well.
Yeah.
So, you know, you still get your fix, can't you, with your remote gaming and where you can. I'd urge anyone to, if they see a physical event going on, think about attending. If they see some things or arranging some of themselves and hosting it. And, you know, the amount that I've got out of sort of being the person who said, I'll try and arrange that. And very much credit to Jason for being the driving force behind this one. But, you know, whether that's the Royal Orc or this day, you know, yes, it is a lot to do, and it's more than just sitting back and not doing anything. But the richness and the rewards that you get back, you know, pay yourself back in dividends.
Absolutely. Okay, so we sort of briefly touched on your history when you were about 12 years old. You discovered the hobby. Can you sort of elaborate more about that? How it actually happened?
Yeah, I was probably a little bit younger than that. So it was about 12, I think, when I got Warhammer. I was about 10, I think, when I got HeroQuest. So HeroQuest for Christmas, the year that probably most people got HeroQuest for Christmas type of thing. So was that 1990, 1989, something like that. I was about 9 or 10. I can't remember the exact year, and I don't know if I got it the first year it came out, but I certainly got it for Christmas. And it was, it was on telly, all the adverts and everything like that. So up to that point, I'd liked, you know, I've got loads of board games, and that was something that I was quite interested in, and, you know, sort of Lego and, you know, those kind of kids' toys, really. I liked stuff that was a bit fantasy-ish, books and so on, but, you know, not really any sense of knowing anything about whether that was role-playing or certainly not wargaming, no kind of concept of that whatsoever. So very much that HeroQuest gateway, And then you get the little leaflet in there, Games Workshop, or what's that? And, you know, start seeing things. And then the next year, so that would, yeah, I think that would have been probably the Christmas I was 10 or 11, 10 perhaps. And then it was when I went to secondary school, when I just turned 11, that then I started there, and there was just all these new kids who, you know, had been to other primary schools that you meet, and a lot of them were into it, and a lot of them were also playing Warhammer, which was the thing that I knew existed because I'd seen the little leaflet and catalogue, but I didn't really know anything much more about it. I just assumed it was something that was really complicated, and probably I've got a feeling it even had like a sort of suggested age range or something like that on the leaflet. That seems to be a memory that sticks in my mind, and this idea that HeroQuest was kind of, you know, 10 plus and Warhammer was maybe for sort of 13 or 14 year olds or so on. But yeah, talking to people there, that would have been third edition time. My friends had the third edition rule books. Some of them have got armies. I remember someone had a really nice undead army and a Skaven army, and just seeing all these kind of things, probably relatively small armies, but, you know, people had stuff. There wasn't anywhere in the town I grew up that you could buy stuff initially, but then a small shop opened up that was selling Citadel miniatures alongside other toys and bits and bobs and model kits and so on. And we would go into Birmingham on the train and go to the Games Workshop there and buy things. So it sort of just gradually, by a period of osmosis, just getting into it. I can't really remember exactly when I got a first White Dwarf, because I was looking at other people's issues. So it all becomes a bit blurry, doesn't it, as to which was the first one I saw versus which was the one I bought. It would have been round about, I mean, basically it was pretty much at the point that the new fourth edition was coming out that I started getting seriously interested in it, and then realized that if I asked for the fourth edition box set in 1992 for Christmas, then that would give me the bulk of what I needed to start a high elf army, which is what I was interested in. So that worked really well. I think that box set way of doing things was genius, really. I'm not surprised that they did it, because the success they will have had with the Milton Bradley games, of realizing that if you can get a box and you can get that box into mainstream retailers, then you've kind of hooked people in. So yeah, got that box set, painted up the spearmen and the archers, probably not very well, but, you know, okay. I remember selling the goblins to a friend for like something absolutely ridiculous, like £2.50 for all of them or something like that. Just, you know, like absolutely insane. On the basis that I just thought, well, but at the time I remember thinking afterwards, oh, that was stupid. I should have sold them for more money. But of course, that meant that he would then play with them, and he painted them, and he bought some more figures. So then he had an opponent. So in some ways, actually, it's a good idea to give them away and actually create more of an opportunity to play. So yeah, we were playing that. I bought Man of War when that came out. Again, didn't really play it very much. Bought a couple of the dwarf ships. I bought the 40k second edition box set. Didn't really play that very much. Bought a couple of Space Wolves and the Space Wolves book. And then kind of come 1994, all of it had been sat on the shelf, probably untouched for 6 months. And it all just went in the paper, sold it secondhand for whatever I got for it. I think okay money, actually. But I don't know what I spent the money on. I think I bought a bike or something. But, you know, it was, it just felt like it kind of came and it went in actually a very short amount of time, to be honest. To some extent, I regret it. But at the same time, I think, well, I did do it. That was what I felt at the time. I wasn't obviously massively interested. And then later in life, there's just this little bit of a moment of recognition of thinking, oh, that was pretty good. I enjoyed that. And thinking back to it and thinking about why I enjoyed it and what it gave me. And, you know, I probably at that time in my life, I was in a period where, you know, I had a sort of personal circumstances. My brother had died when I was 10. And, you know, I think that going into that world and sort of immersing myself in that fantasy world was something quite valuable to me at the time. And then maybe by the time I was about 14, I was starting to perhaps recover a little bit from that, and then becoming maybe, I don't know, just wanted to do things that are different, and sort of saw that as being a bit of an introspective hobby, and then wanted to do something that was more outward looking. But yeah, then just as I got older, I kind of realized that actually my true passions really are in those kind of spaces, the storytelling and the narrative and the creating the worlds and playing the worlds and exploring it and just the wonder of it all. And yeah, it's all a bit silly, but of course it's a bit silly. That's okay. And I do think that whenever I probably looked slightly over my shoulder and saw anything GW when I was an older teen or in my early 20s, what I would have seen would have been the grim, dark, you know, tough exterior, the look that doesn't appeal to me, the stuff that personally doesn't say anything to me. I want to see bright green, you know, grassy fields with brightly painted models on, rather than a kind of grim, dark, tough world out there. You know, I think that speaks to the escapism, probably. You know, at that time, I enjoyed the silliness of it. I enjoyed the jokes, and I enjoyed the bright colours, and I enjoyed the cartooniness of it. And yeah, that would have been an age thing, but it probably would have been circumstantial as well, of wanting to find something that was kind of fun and happy and light, but at the same time, imaginative and exciting. So yeah, it sort of just, I think, just lodged there in my brain and just stayed there. And whatever that impetus was in 2018 to look or to see something, I can't remember what that is, but that coming back to it thing, it's so significant. The amount of people who return to something, whether they move back to where they grew up or they do something, there's a point in your life where there's this concept of things becoming, wanting to return and wanting to take comfort in that nostalgia. And you know, and it's been brilliant. I've loved every minute of getting back into it, and it's been great for me. It provides, you know, that opportunity to have some quiet time and get into that flow state when you're doing things, but it also gives you the opportunity to dream about things. You know, you might be stuck in a traffic jam, but you can be thinking about these imaginary worlds and what you might do in them. And I don't know, there's something, the childlike wonder has come back, and it's yeah, I'm loving it.
Oh, that's wonderful, man. I'm really glad you found the hobby again. And like you said, it's, you know, you may not know or remember how you got back into it, but at least you got back into it, and you're really, really in a good space, in a good place, you know, reconnecting with people, making it a social connection as well through Discord, and then, you know, meeting up with your friends in order to play games and actually playing your fully, you know, maybe your first and fully fledged game of Warhammer, which is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's been brilliant. I mean, I've been playing other games, like smaller skirmish games and things like that, which I've really enjoyed. And like I say, when I first got back in with the Burrows and Badgers, my oldest daughter was really keen on it. I mean, she was about 11 at the time, and she's 17 now, so she's a bit less interested. But, you know, she still will humour me. And actually, do you know what I saw the other day? She's doing her A-levels at the moment, so she's literally got, you know, a few weeks left and she's done with high school, and it's really busy. And she's got at the end of her bed, it's probably up there now, the Burrows and Badgers book, and she's got a piece of paper in there, and she was writing herself a little warband list. Yeah. And it's like, she's just doing that, and it's escapism. She's thinking, I liked that when I was 11. I enjoyed doing that. You know, I enjoyed, and she's going back to something that brings her comfort and brings her enjoyment.
That's amazing, isn't it? I would love to see more girls or women into wargaming. I know they're out there.
Yeah. It's
something that mainly women are attracted to, the painting and the hobby side of things, which I totally get, you know, the artistic side of things. I've heard of Burrows and Badgers. I've never played it. I saw it that it got, I think it was voted number one as the number one wargame or rule set for the War Games Illustrated, or which...
Yeah, that's right. It's actually a really good little rule set. It works really well. I mean... Yeah, my oldest daughter, she's absolutely table. I think I've never won. I think she's beat me about 18 times. She's completely ruthless. But then she is also, my younger daughter, she's very artistic. She loves to paint. She loves to draw. She, you know, I'm trying to get her into miniature painting, but she won't do it. But the stuff that she can draw, she's 40. She's a highly skilled artist. She's brilliant. But yeah, my oldest daughter, she's much more into video games, and she's, you know, she knows. She's, you know, can play all these games and knows exactly how many hit points and percentages chances she's got of winning on anything. She's a tactician, absolutely. Whereas I'm not. I'm useless at that. I don't care. I some of the best games I've ever played, I've lost. So
yeah, me
quite
too.
Happy for her to enjoy winning and me to enjoy the spectacle of it all. But yeah, no, you're right about the diversity, and it would be nice to see more more girls and women into the hobby. And I think a lot of it comes from being honest. I do think that the gateway of, and I think that it's, you know, the gateway on the public image of the GW stuff, you know, it's very highly stylized, the 40K stuff, the Age of Sigmar stuff. You know, if that's your aesthetic and you love it, brilliant. It's going to totally hook you in, but it's not for everyone. And I think actually if you expose people to the wider world of all what's out there, you know, some brilliant stuff. One of the schools I work at is a girls' school, and I help run a board game club there on a Friday lunchtime. I was talking to some of the girls at the school there and telling them a bit about Frostgrave, and that really ticked their boxes. That sounded really interesting to them. They liked the look of it. They liked the sound of it. You know, it sounded like something that they would very happily read books set in that world and want to explore in that world. And you know, there are games out there with an aesthetic that probably is less macho, but the GW stuff is pretty hard and it's pretty masculine in my view. And that will put some people off.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think I totally agree with you. Yeah, the diversity in the hobby is really important, as in terms of like different genres, different styles. Barrows and Badges is its own very unique thing. Great to see it's so successful. I've seen other ones where there's sort of like these rat little mouse or mice or rat people. I can't remember what it's called now, but I can see, yeah, there's different games that have really appealed to certain types of people, especially girls, when they see all those little cutesy type things. What was the other one I played that I got? It's like Golden Axe, but it's like all these chibi type characters in there.
Okay, right, that's cool.
From Simon, that was years and years and years ago. But yeah, those licenses, those kind of IPs are really popular with everybody because it'll attract everybody, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
The geek guys, the geek girls, and that kind of thing. And yeah, it's really fun. But anyhow, Mark, I know you're pressed for time, mate, for today. I know you've got some pressing work to get on with. But I really want to send my appreciation to yourself for taking the time to come and talk to us and giving us some really great insights in your, you know, your journey into the hobby and, you know, your current state in the hobby. And mate, we'll definitely get you back on to talk about some different topics in the future, I'm sure.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. And I just want to say to anyone listening, if you want to see pictures of the games day that we did, the big 8,000 point Orcs and Goblins stuff, if you go on the Bedroom Battlefields Discord, if you join that, I mean, everyone's very welcome to join that as well. So if you're a listener and maybe a Discord member on the Crown of Command one, hop on over to the Bedroom Battlefields one as well, because, you know, there's a lot of crossover, but they're not the same community. So, you know, I think you'll get value from being a member of both. I certainly do. And there's pictures and stuff over there. But also, I've just sent Matthew a battle report that all four of us have written up who played, very much in the sort of style of a White Dwarf battle report. And Matthew's going to host that on his bedroombattlefields.com site. And if I get some time at some point, one evening, I might design it up to look in a kind of White Dwarf-esque style and make that available as a PDF to people as well, if they're interested in seeing it in a kind of look and feel, a bit of the Hero Hammer magazine style look to it.
Great. Okay, that sounds really good. And please go and check out the Bedroom and Battlefields podcast that Matthew hosts. It's a really, really entertaining podcast. So I'll leave links for that below in the show notes, along with the Discord link as well. So you can just click on that and join the community there. And look, again, Mark, thank you again for today. I'm sure we'll have you back because, you know, you've got a wealth of ideas. You're very passionate about the hobby. And I'm sure there's something else we can tap into and talk about in the future, mate.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me on, Josh. And thank you for your contribution and your podcast.
No problem, mate. My pleasure. Okay, mate. Until next time, take care. And we'll talk to you again soon.